Gemma Rasmussen is with us. She is Consumer New Zealand's Head of Communications and Campaigns. And we're talking parking fines. And I was regaling, I'm sure I went to battle with Wilson's over a parking fine for being like 2 minutes past my due date in a parking building, due time. But the lift had broken down and I spent ages ringing Otis and getting the lift repaired in the parking building. I'm pretty sure I won that battle.
Nicely done. Good on you for...
Well, they're notoriously challenging to battle against. Let's talk about what you want to get into with parking tickets and the fine print.
Sure. So, I mean, we have all, well, many of us have received a parking ticket and it can be so deflating, particularly when you see how high it is. So we just wanted to outline some points on how you could actually contest this. So when you enter a car park, there's normally a teeny tiny sign which will outline the parking conditions and what the fine is going to be. And technically, when you drive in and you park, that is you agreeing to those terms. But with a fine, that the fee actually really needs to reflect the loss suffered from the car park.
Hence my fury at being 2 minutes late when I was exactly. trying to help them out.
That's right. So in this instance, they weren't providing the service with the lift not working, but also how much money were they actually losing in those 2 minutes from you, still staying in that car park? If we were saying a private car park costs $3 per hour and then you overstay by 2 hours and then they need to think about, how much is it going to cost them to send the letter and administration and all of that, then maybe something like $20 would be reasonable. So we would really say to people, when you get your parking fines, think about what the rates are that you agreed to pay and how much are they actually trying to charge you. Because if it is too much, then you are within your rights to contest those fines.
Are you? Can you say this is not a fair fine for the amount of time I was over?
Yeah, so you could ask them to do a breakdown, a justification for the fine that they are charging you. And what we actually have on our website is a template, which you can then take and provide to the parking company. So we think that 14 days is not enough time to appeal a notice. So you should have $28 and you can lodge... 28 days to lodge your claim. If you're not happy, then you can always take this to disputes tribunal. Places like council, they have really great setups for disputing.
Failed there before, but anyway.
I mean, we're not always in the right, but if you think that you are, then it's absolutely worth contesting because they can be quite painful.
And even with the private companies?
With the private companies,
now, that's
absolutely.
Now, the next thing, the challenge is always trying to contact anyone mm-hmm. or ring anyone, but with respect to that teeny tiny sign, is there information there where you can lodge an appeal or what? Or is it more...
It can be harder to find sometimes, but it is their responsibility to be contactable. So if you're not seeing it on that sign, and generally it is there, then you should be looking for a website and Googling for a phone number. But if they're not enabling you to actually communicate to, challenge the fine, then there are problems there.
And on your website, do you give the basis on which you can make your case?
Correct.
And do you cite the regulation involved? Is there a regulation that governs it or what?
So generally what we would say is that if it's not reasonable, then, that would be in breach of fair trading. So we would say that, they do need to adhere to the law, and having this template really outlines the case. It gives everything you need to consider whether the fine is reasonable or not.
But have you taken them to task over specific cases? Like, I think one of your teams, amazing how personal stuff gets.
It's always someone on the team.
It's the sense of injustice. Like, there's other times where you're right, you'll go fair cop, whatever.
Yeah.
And then there's times where you go, no, that is, I've taken a photo, my bumper is not over that yellow line, I'm sorry.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you just get enraged. You had one of a $65 parking fee, and was that for overparking by a small amount of time or what?
So they stayed overnight in a virtually empty Wilson car park, and Wilson said that fee covered staff wages, uniform, vehicle maintenance, fuel, signage, health and safety equipment.
So their total costs were divided by however many people they copped, basically.
That's right.
That's that argument, isn't it?
Yeah, and we would say, well, you know, that is just not a reasonable amount in terms of that car being in that car park. You know, that's not what that would be costing them, and someone would be within their right to contest that.
And had it happened in a public car park, it would have been more like $15.
Exactly.
The fine. Right.
Yeah, and I think that is something that we do really see with these commercial car parks, is that their fines are a lot harsher, and I think people are afraid of taking them on, and also of things escalating to debt collection. But if you are saying that you are appealing and you communicate that, then they are not allowed to take you to debt collection until the matter is resolved. And if you weren't happy with that resolution, you could then take it to disputes tribunal.
All right. Now, you're running a campaign on greenwashing. This is not a new concept, is it? But is it becoming more and more commonplace?
It is becoming commonplace, and what we're seeing internationally is that in the UK, in Australia, in the EU, our regulators have actually done investigations across multiple industries and have found that of products that are claiming to be green, between 30 and 50% of those claims are unsubstantiated, misleading, just blatantly false. And so we feel in New Zealand that we are possibly behind the eight ball here, which is why we went to the supermarket to do a little bit of a recon to get an understanding of what's happening on our shelves and is this actually an issue.
What did you find?
So what we found was that there were a number of products on our shelves that actually had really unsubstantiated or misleading claims. So there were things like products saying that they were paper pouches, but they actually contained plastic. There were products like Dilma tea bags that said they were biodegradable, but that's only if you used an industrial biodegrader. Which
is that the plastic wrapper they come in? That drives me crazy. I don't need my tea bag in a plastic wrapper.
That's
just
right.
Just put it in a box with the other tea bags.
Exactly. So they're saying that this could compost when it couldn't. Same with a packet of chips. If you put that in your compost, that is not going to break down. We even saw one where the baby wipes were compostable, which, according to their testing, they were, but you're not allowed to put human poo in compost. So it was, you know, essentially useless. So we were seeing all these claims where things looked to be really green. And the thing about green products is that, one, people often pay a premium for them, and two, it's actually really hard for someone who's shopping at the supermarket to know what is really, truly
people
green.
People want to do the right thing.
People want
but
to do the right
thing. But it's particularly annoying when it comes to the packaging and being told. This drives me crazy, actually. The one thing I would say about the sort of the plastic packaging that you get, say, in a takeaway meal, was at least I knew what to do with it, right? It went into
exactly.
the recycling. Well, unfortunately, a lot of that recycling is sitting piled up here in New Zealand waiting for it to go somewhere or have something
That's
done
it.
With it. But when all these new kinds of packaging come in, and you don't know what they are and you don't know what to do with them, right?
Yes.
And yet people are motivated to try and do the right thing. So they're really looking for the good information.
They are.
Is there any accountability when you make claims that simply aren't true?
Well, you would hope so. What the Commerce Commission has is guidance for business about what they can and can't do in terms of green claims. But the problem, where we're falling over here, is we can see that there are all these things on supermarket shelves and probably in clothing stores and things like that. What it relies on is either a competitor or a shopper reporting this to Commerce Commission so it can be investigated and to get a slap on the wrist. And what we found through our investigation was it took hours of research for these items on the shelves to ascertain, is this greenwashing or is this a genuine, you know, genuine product. So we're kind of in a system right now where a lot of green products are able to just, well, greenwashing products are able to be there with no real penalty, and businesses are profiting.
What about the recycled bags? This is a biggie, actually. Everyone's fretting about plastic. There are efforts by some companies to genuinely have a high proportion of recycling in their products. I'm thinking of flight plastics. There'll still be a percentage that is virgin plastic, i.e., you know, first time. But, you know, a lot of investment's going into trying to do these things. And yet are we having some just making claims again that are not true?
Yes, so we did actually find one bag which
was soft plastic, was it?
It was an ocean-bound plastic. So what you're thinking when you read ocean bound is that they've picked up these plastic from the ocean and then they've created a new plastic bag. But if you actually look into what they're doing here, the plastic just has to be found 50 kilometres from a shoreline. So that's not necessarily coming from the ocean. The other thing is that someone buys this and they go, great, this is repurposed plastic, but it's still plastic.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is the limited...
The EU are often first off the plates on these things, and they are looking at cracking down on use of terms like eco and green and environmentally friendly.
Correct.
Are you going to have some kind of a threshold of actual information, verified information, before you can use those?
Well, there's a number of different ways in which we could tackle this problem. It could be that businesses are just outright banned from using terms like eco and green, environmentally friendly. It could be that before a product goes on a shelf, and if they're making any type of green claim, it needs to be independently vetted by a third party. And there could be rules like if you're a company like Mr. Rogers, which is the spice brand, they've got a little label on their packet which looks like a certification, but that comes from that very own company, so it should be potentially only third party independent certification that's allowed. So that's why we're calling for investigation across these multiple industries, because as we can see right now, it's probably rife.
Now, speaking of which, the good old special that's not really special.
Mm-hmm.
When do we know when something really is on special?
Well, I think that the supermarkets are definitely okay with confusing us a bit. And when you go to any supermarket, if you look around, there are just sales everywhere. There's multi-buy, there's club deal, there's super saver, there's everyday low. And it can be a really jarring experience going through the supermarket and actually trying to ascertain what is a real special. And after the Commerce Commission investigation, it was put to the supermarkets to clean up their act. But one thing that we are actually seeing, we're getting a lot of people contacting us and saying, you know, I've seen this multi-buy and the numbers aren't adding up. Or there was a display ticket and when I got to the till, the price was more expensive. People seem to be having a lot of confusion. We're getting a lot of people sending us examples of misleading or dodgy, dubious pricing coming in from the supermarkets.
Again, accountability?
I mean, they've had a lot of pressure on them. We know historically, looking from that Commerce Commission study, that their profits were deemed to be excessive and very high. And we think the supermarkets need to be putting in more investment into their pricing and promotional practices, because when there are these pricing errors, it is always the shopper that ends up paying more.
Gemma, thank you so much for that. Gemma Rasmussen is Consumer New Zealand's Head of Communications and Campaigns.